This is West Southwest on WMUK. I'm Earlene McMichael. Coming up, WMUK local government and education reporter Sevilla Mann talks with Gordon Evans about next month's primary election for Kalamazoo County Commission. But first, I talk with Robert Ezell, one of Kalamazoo County's longest-serving nonprofit executives. Ezell has headed the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Kalamazoo for 30 years. He retires on December 31st. The Western Michigan University grad has been honored many times for his dedication to youth. He started out as a part-time game room and program director in the early 70s at the Boys and Girls Club. Within 2 years, he became associate director. In 1986, he was named executive director. For those who may be unfamiliar with the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Kalamazoo, what is that?
Boys and Girls Club of Greater Kalamazoo is an after-school programming providing services for school-age youth between the ages of 6 and 18 or kindergarten through high school.
So in 1986, you became the executive director of the Boys and Girls Club. That's about 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's my understanding that actually you may have broken a record here in Kalamazoo County as being the longest-serving nonprofit executive. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
How does that make you feel?
I feel good about it. We've done a good job at the Boys and Girls Club, not just myself, but all the many people that have come through my supervision and have impacted the lives of many, many, many young people. So I feel very good about the number of years that I've been there.
No one, I imagine, stays in your position as long as you do, especially in the nonprofit world and one in which you have a board. What do you attribute your longevity to?
Passion, a mission, a vision, and a purpose, strong board involvement and leadership from the board, and just a strong desire to make a difference in what we do in Kalamazoo, and my passion for helping young people have a future and a plan for their futures. Me, myself, I never knew my natural parents. I was given up at birth, and I know the particular emphasis of having a mentor and people that really care about young people. And that's part of my passion, to try to help make a difference and be that mentor and be that leader that keeps people, that keeps kids out of the rough and on the right path to a successful future.
I think you're being a little bit modest when you talk about that. That's a deeply personal story for you. You said that you were given up for adoption, and ultimately you landed at the Lake Farm for Boys.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about how you grew up.
Boy, I've been fortunate. And obviously there's been some struggles in my life and a lot of adversity. Very young. I don't remember a lot of the early years. I do remember being in Catholic orphanages, being part of the foster care system and going from home to home. I developed a lot of anxiety because some of the home foster homes at that time that you went to were strictly for profit for the foster parents. A lot of false care, if you will, in terms of you really didn't get that love thing, that feeling of belonging, having a opportunity to have an influence over what's going on in your life, where people that care about you give you those opportunities and those options. And I didn't have those options early on. When I did come to Kalamazoo and I landed at Lake Farm, that's where my true mentor and father figure.
Uh-huh. And that's now called Lakeside Academy. Uh-huh.
Academy, right.
Right.
So when I landed at Lake Farm Boys Home at that time, it was a place for orphan boys and boys from families that had to be removed from families for whatever reason. And when I landed at Lake Farm Boys Home, that's where I met my mentor and my father figure, which was Clarence Dooley. All the boys there affectionately called him Pops Dooley. And I think that's where my life began, actually.
The executive director.
He was the executive director there, yeah. And
How old were you when you got there?
I was just going into the seventh grade. And so, 12, maybe? And I was just, that's where my life began, I think. This was a man who had a tremendous amount of influence, a tremendous amount of love and caring for the boys that were there. He really made a difference. He kept me, he gave me a mission, a vision, and a purpose. He gave me an opportunity to be successful in life. When I needed him most, he was always there. I can remember going to Oakwood Junior High, which is Woods Lake Elementary now, and parent meetings, he was always there. Anything that I needed in terms of clothing, you know, it wasn't evident that I was living at Lake Farm Boys Home. Okay, he made that clear that I was going to be just like any other kid that was going to school, and there was not going to be any differences that would identify me as being out of the ordinary, if you know what I mean. So he took all that care to make sure that I was just like the mainstream, that there was no differences in me and the other kids that were going to school.
Studies, you know, have shown that children who grow up even in the most dire circumstances certainly can increase their chances of success in life with exposure to even one caring adult. And that's what you're showing right here.
Absolutely. At the Boys and Girls Club, the main thing is developing relationships with our young people when they come in the door, that they do belong, that they are somebody, and that we care about them. I ask my staff to know as many kids by name as possible. When a young person walks in that door, my staff have to be able to say and welcome them by name. We don't want young people coming through our door and feel as though they're not there, that they're not noticed, that nobody cares about them. They get enough of that in life. What we are doing at the Boys and Girls Club is giving kids an opportunity to have influence and feel as though that they're there. We ask them, how's your day? Is there anything going on today that you want us to know? We want kids happy. We want kids to come to the club because they feel that they're wanted there.
All the programming is free.
Yes.
During the academic year, you operate after school through after school hours up through when? How late are you open?
We're open after school hours approximately 3 o'clock until 8 o'clock, Monday through Friday.
And then during the summers, are you not also open?
We are. Actually, our activities are really extended in the summer. We open up at 9 o'clock, and we're open until 8 o'clock during the summer. What that entails is that at 9 o'clock, we have what a participating arts academy. And that's an opportunity for young people 6 through 12 to engage in non-traditional activities such as instrumental music, dance, ballet. We have drums, acting, talent programs. We have variety shows. Then we have our open program, our open campus that starts at 1 o'clock and goes to 8. And that's from Kate, again, that's school age youth for that program. We also have a summer camp, and those are ages 8 through 13. We take out 48 campers a week. It's an overnight camping program, and that's absolutely free as well.
An overnight camping program, how long does that last? Is that a week?
That's just during the summer. That's a 6-week program.
Where do they go?
We're about 45 minutes to an hour from Kalamazoo. Our camp is actually in Hastings. We have over 250 acres there. Cabins, big activity, all-purpose facility, and a swimming pool out there. Kids can hike. They can enjoy nature, environmental education. It's really a great opportunity to get our kids out of the city and into an environment where they're unfamiliar with.
Can you tell the listeners where you're located and some of the other satellite locations that you have?
Sure. Our main location, our main campus is at 915 Lake Street. When I started working at the Boys and Girls Club, that was our main campus. It was our only campus at that point.
That's actually adjacent to Edison Elementary School.
Elementary School, right across from St. Joe's Church, another landmark if people are familiar with that area. That area is really expanding a lot. And when I first started working at the club, the South Side was mainly people that owned their own homes. And that has changed drastically in the last 30 years. Most of that is now rental property, single parent families, families living in that housing. So it's really changed the environment of that neighborhood drastically, as I said, in the last 30 years. We have two other sites. One is located on Patterson. We are in with the Douglas Community Association. We partner and collaborate with them. So at one end of the building, we have a program that's adjacent to Interfaith Homes. We intentionally located there. At the time, the Office of Juvenile Justice had some funds available for public housing, activities for public housing, or we had to be within 500 feet of public housing, which the Douglas Community Association really worked out well for us in their partnership with our board of directors. The Douglas Community Association board of directors came together and agreed that this would be a partnership with us that we felt would benefit both the young people and the community as a whole on the north side of Kalamazoo. We have another unit located on Gertrude Street. We partnered with Kalamazoo Public Schools. We have had a strong relationship with Kalamazoo Public Schools. Our Gertrude location, which is located at Northeastern Elementary.
On the east side of town.
On the east side of town, yes.
Why is it important to keep kids engaged?
With the multitude of things facing young people today, there has to be a place where kids can go and be held accountable, number one, but also have an opportunity to engage in positive activity. Many of the kids that we see are, as I said, coming from one-parent families, and many of the parents or the kids' parents are really struggling to for basic needs, a roof over their head, food, clothing, those type of things. And what Boys and Girls Club does is allow parents the opportunity to have their kids in a safe place, so where they don't have to worry about where their kids are after school, whether their kids are unsupervised, whether their kids are subject to negative influence of our community. I mean, of our world. There's all kind of things facing kids today that even when I was a child, even though I came from, was given up at birth, I never had to face the challenges that these young people face today. I mean, there's a lot of negative things out there. There's a lot of aggressive behavior. Our kids face a number of negative things just going to school every day. We are located in the three areas in town where the most identified free and reduced lunch kids are identified. The most violence is identified in the areas where we are. So I think it's very important that we provide the type of program that's going to allow young people to develop their character. And character is, in my opinion, one of the most important things that we can develop in our young people is character and accountability. And I think that's what we do at our clubs. While allowing kids to have fun, we don't want to take the place of public schools. I mean, kids go to school for a reason, but I also believe kids have to have fun and they have to have smiles on their faces after school and a time just to relax and be themselves. And I believe that's what we allow to happen at our clubs.
You got the opportunity to head a nonprofit organization just like your mentor.
Right.
Pops.
Yep, absolutely.
Is he still living?
No, he's passed away.
Do you think he'd be proud of you?
I know he would be.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Because Pop Dooley is with me all the time because he gave me an opportunity. He gave me a chance. And I think what I've done with my life, he would be proud of because he spent his whole life doing pretty much the same thing I'm doing.
What have you learned is the secret to reaching kids? What is it that we could all learn?
I think it's love and commitment. I think it's love and commitment and consistency with young people. In the many years I've been at the club, the thing that really inspires me to want to continue this type of work, because I know that the impact is there. And I've had kids call me back. They see me in the community. Now their kids are coming to the club. You know, I've been there. I've probably seen a few generations of kids that come back to the club. Their kids come to the club because their parents had a good experience there. We're not going to reach every kid. I've never assume that we're going to make a difference in every kid's life. But we know that if we touch one kid or 10 kids or 20 kids, we're doing our job. We're doing our job. And I talk to funders, I talk to people in regards to, you know, our society is driven by numbers now and data. Well, that's fine. But each kid is an individual. I don't count kids as data. I count kids as individuals and human beings. And if you can affect change in one of those young people, it does matter.
I should mention for those people who don't know that the Boys and Girls Club is a national organization.
Yes.
And this just happens to be kind of the local branch of mm-hmm. it. Just number wise, how many kids do you serve a year?
We have a membership of over 2,000 young people. We have an average daily attendance between all of our clubs at about 250 young people a day. And I'm glad you brought that up, Erlene. We are part of a national organization. There are over 4,000 boys and girls clubs in the country. We're in Europe and Asia. We're on Indian land, and we're also on military facilities. Our national membership is over 4.2 million young people. We're the largest youth-serving organization in the country. And our national organization has been around for over 100 years. In Kalamazoo, we've been around for over 60 years. So we have a long history in Kalamazoo. On a local perspective and on a national perspective, we got a huge, huge historical impact on youth nationwide.
In terms of your programming, I do see that you have lots of different categories, and I'm very impressed with the depth of them. One category is you have programming dealing with character and leadership development. Mm-hmm. You have some dealing with education and career development. A heading under family support services, mm-hmm. health and life skills, things with the arts, sports and fitness and recreation. Talk about some of your signature programs that you have.
Some of our really signature programs would be our Youth of the Year program. We identify a youth that's been positively engaged in the Boys and Girls Club, positively engaged in school, which means they're going to school and carrying that C average or better, and strong community involvement and family involvement. And each year, we, as a staff, identify those kids who potentially can be selected of the as a member of the year, both boys and girls. What that consists of is that they have to write an essay about what the Boys and Girls Club means to them. They have to write an essay about post-secondary education, and then they have to do a public presentation.
At the Boys and Girls Club?
At the Boys and Girls Club. And then we select community members to come and be on a panel of judges to select the eventual member of the year. We've had anywhere from 5 to 10 youth of high school age compete in that event every year. That winner, local winner, goes on to a state competition, and the winner of the state competition has the same criteria that they have to adhere to. The winner of the state competition then goes on to regional competition. If they win at the regional competition, they then go on to the national competition, and the winner of the national competition then becomes the advocate or the voice for Boys and Girls Clubs for the whole next year. They meet the president, they go to the Oval Office.
The president of the United States?
Of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And they go around the country in terms of advocating for Boys and Girls Clubs of America. It's a very prestigious award that they receive. And we look at it in that same category here locally with our state and our local Youth of the Year.
Do the kids get excited about it?
Very excited about it. It is one of the most rewarding days of the year for us, because we're picking the very cream of the crop for us locally here. This young person, whether it's a boy or whether it's a girl, we've had one state winner here that was a girl. Our staff just get really, really, really excited about it. At the competition, we invite all the parents of there, all the relatives. We normally have it at the Radisson in one of their conference rooms, which is full.
When they make these presentations?
Yeah, when they make these presentations. So it's pretty exciting for us, but it's really emotional, because they talk about, man, some of the challenges they have as kids, how much their parents mean to them. And it really does, you know, bring tears from our staff, because our staff work with them, our staff mentor them, our staff work with them to get them prepared.
How do the kids feel about whether they win or not, just having gone through that experience?
They feel that they've accomplished something, and you can do it if you put your mind to it. And our staff feel very well, because they've had an opportunity to really impact that young person itself. Even after the event, those kids really stay close to those staff that have worked with them.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me, Arlene. I appreciate it.
Robert Ezell will retire as executive director of the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Kalamazoo on December 31st. For a longer version of my interview, visit our webpage at WMUK.org. For West Southwest on WMUK, I'm Erlene McMichael.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. There are three contested primaries for Kalamazoo County Commission next month. That includes two incumbents who face challengers from within their party. WMUK reporter Sevilla Mann covers Kalamazoo County. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Gordon.
What are the big issues that the next Kalamazoo County Commission is going to face when they take office after the November election?
This is not the only thing on the county board's plate, but it's the big one. The big looming task that the county board will have before it after the election is to find the county a permanent administrator. This is something that the current board has attempted to do. They just haven't had much success. This board came into office with the seat newly empty, the administrator's seat. They ran a search. They had some finalists last summer. A couple finalists pulled out. That pool collapsed. Started another search. They hired Terrence Nugel, who had been an elected county supervisor in Iowa. He started in December. A few months later, he was put on leave while the county investigated whether he'd made some inappropriate comments to staff. Nugel then resigned before the investigation was over. The county was then pretty much back where it started, with Deputy Administrator John Fall serving as the county's interim administrator. The current board thought it best to wait till after this election in November to find a permanent administrator. So that's the big issue that the board faces, is finding a person to fill that county's top seat.
An issue which pretty much hung over the current board for the entire two-year term for which they served.
That's right. There were a lot of false starts. You know, having a pool, narrowing it down, oh, it fell apart. Having a pool, hiring somebody, he's on leave, now he's gone. We don't have an administrator again. Yes, it has definitely hung over this board.
So that's the big one, but are there some other issues that the next county board will also have to face?
Some of the other big things that the county will be looking at when they come back have to do with buildings and space. There are several county agencies that either are running out of space or the building they're in isn't serving them very well. The Michigan Avenue Courthouse needs some work. The county health department has outgrown its space. The county's looking at moving the health department into a new building. And Animal Services has a building that's pretty obsolete. They're having a hard time keeping the animals healthy in there, so they need a new building.
There are some commissioners who have decided not to run again for various reasons. Tell us who they are.
First, you've got Board Chair John Taylor. He's in District 3. He's running for county clerk, so he won't be back to the county commission. Vice Chair Jeff Hepler is also leaving. That's District 6. Hepler's running for sheriff, so he won't be back to the board. And then in District 10, you've got Larry Provencher, who also won't be back.
And this follows an election in 2014 where there were six commissioners who did not return for one reason or another. A couple of them went on to the state house. A couple of them tried to get elected to the state house and didn't make it. But what does that tell us about what we're going to have after the fall election in terms of inexperience on the Kalamazoo County Commission?
Well, it means you will have a board with some new people. I talked to former county administrator Peter Batani, also a former commissioner, and he says, you know, from an administrative point of view, as a member of the board, you really do want a board where members know the ropes.
I think the sort of the popular thinking or the popular notion about elected officials is the longer you're there, the less effective you are. And that's exactly the opposite is true, that the longer you're there, the more effective you become, because the more you know, about yourself, the more you know about your other commissioners, about the issues.
Former Administrator Batani says, as a board member, as an administrator, lack of experience is not a virtue.
And because of Jeff Hepler running for Kalamazoo County Sheriff, that's created one vacancy on the board, and that has also created a contested primary for his seat, right?
That's right. You've got three Republicans who are running for Jeff Hepler's seat, no Democrats.
And then we have two incumbent commissioners who face challenges from within their party. Tell us about these races.
Sure. In the 4th District, you've got Mike Seals, the incumbent, who's a Democrat. He's got a primary challenge from former Commissioner Frank Thompson. And then in the 9th District, you've got incumbent Dale Sugars. Sugars is a Republican. He's got a primary challenge from Brian Kovacic.
Okay, people will remember the name Frank Thompson from previous service on the Kalamazoo County Commission. What does he say about running again?
Frank Thompson served a number of years on the Kalamazoo County Commission. He lost to Mike Seals in the primary in 2010. Frank says with his previous service on the board, he'd be a good fit for the commission.
I think with my knowledge and past experiences that I would do a good job. I won't say any better than Mike or the other candidates, but I've got all my records that will back up my statement.
So that's Frank Thompson, a former Kalamazoo County Commissioner, running again and challenging Michael Seals in the Democratic primary. Seals is in his third term and seeking a fourth. What does Michael Seals have to say, Sevilla, about being challenged in the August primary?
Seals says, yes, Frank Thompson has experience as a former commissioner, but maybe not the kind of experience he'd need to be an effective member of the board now.
But a lot's changed since he's left, and it's not as easy as it used to be. I was telling somebody the other day, it was a lot easier when we had 17 than it is to have 11. And, you know, that's because we got 11 different opinions, but we're having difficulty meeting somewhere in the middle. And that's a challenge. But when we had 17, it seemed like we could get through stuff.
Former Administrator Peter Batani says this race between Michael Seals and Frank Thompson will be a fascinating one to watch.
And then we have, as you mentioned, Dale Sugars, a Republican incumbent commissioner. He is also facing a challenge in the August primary.
That's right. Dale Sugars faces a challenge from Brian Kovacic. This is Dale's first term on the county commission, but he has a long history as an elected official. He was on the Portage City Council. He was a state representative, a state senator. He took a break from public office, and he'd been out for a while when he ran for county board in 2014.
I was kind of drafted. I thought I was done running for office, and there was a large turnover of the 11 commissioners. There were six that were leaving, and so there's going to be six new individuals. So they felt with some experience that I had that that would be helpful and beneficial. So they convinced me to run, and I did, and I think it was a good thing.
That's County Commissioner Dale Sugars. We did reach out to Dale's primary challenger, Brian Kovacic, several times. We didn't hear back from him. Dale Sugars does not seem to be sweating this race too much.
So we have an interesting situation here of a couple of sitting commissioners who are facing a primary. Did anyone you talked to seem to think that it's significant or that it maybe tells us a little something about our current political climate?
I put that question to former Administrator Peter Batani, and he says, in his opinion, it is a little bit unusual, and it's a bit concerning.
Frankly, that's not a good sign. It means that, and I think you see it on both sides. You see it at the local level, and you see it at the national level, right? I mean, you have the party sort of, you know, between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, you have the right pulling to the right. And on the Democratic side, the left pulling to the left. And there's a lot of anger fueled on both sides because, you know, because everybody wants their way. Everybody's the good guy and the other person's always the bad guy. And if you compromise, you know, the point of view is if you compromise, you're corrupt. And no, that's the way the American system was set up. System functions on compromise.
That's Peter Batani, a former Kalamazoo County Commissioner who later became Kalamazoo County Administrator. And we should note that his resignation in 2014 started the chain of events that we talked about earlier, a search for a new administrator that was scrapped, a second search that led to the hiring of Terrence Nugel, who resigned after just a few months on the job, and as Sevilla Mann told us earlier, finding a new administrator will be the biggest job ahead for the next Kalamazoo County Commission. So Sevilla, that's the August primary. What do we find when we look ahead to November?
You've got 11 seats total on the Kalamazoo County Board, so there's 11 seats that are up in the fall. You'll have eight contested races in the general election, and the Republicans have candidates in every district but one. Two districts have no Democratic opposition, and we've heard about at least one third-party candidate who's running, and we might hear about more of them by the fall.
Thank you, Sevilla.
Thanks, Gordon.
WMUK local government and education reporter Sevilla Mann. You can find our stories on the August primary at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.